So coming up next, we have Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the Thursday, September 22nd, 2022 show. Really packed with a lot of clips and cuts. And the day has been really busy for me. I've been kind of a bit under the weather, and so we'll see if I can weather it or whether I will start sleeping on you. But let's roll with the punches. We've got stuff from the Benchlands. We've got, might have a report from a peace rally at Ocean Street and previously at the courthouse, maybe at Jimmy Panetta's office. So let's roll.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So this morning, or possibly yesterday, I got this notice, which read as follows. We will gather at the steps of the county building at 701 Ocean Street with pro-peace signs at 1 o'clock. At 1:30, we will enter the county building, room 318C, to speak to Jimmy Panetta's aide. After the meeting, we will go out to the corner of Ocean and Water Streets to hold up signs to incoming traffic. So that was more than an hour and a half ago. Let's give a call to Alan and see how things went. So let me begin again here. You said you had about eight or nine folks who showed up at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, and then we went into his office, and the aide was extremely friendly.
Uh huh.
And seemed to know. He seemed to agree completely with us.
Uh huh.
And know a lot. I wish he were the rep instead of Panetta.
Huh.
And so, you know, we laid it all out, you know, in a half an hour, all the reasons why this is an insane endeavor, by our nation.
And we're talking, of course, about the, what specifically were you protesting? Did you want to see changed?
Well, we want to see, emphasis on negotiations. We want to see no more money going for war. We want the money to go for the climate and human needs like housing. And we recognize that the suffering that is created by this war and the potential nuclear war risk.
Mm-hmm. And the aide agreed with everything, and he explained very carefully why Jimmy voted the way he did on the various military appropriations that are funding this massive rearmament.
No, he didn't. But, you know, one thing, he did vote against a supplemental increase.
That's good.
So I just, now I'm... I got to walk over to my wife picking me up. So it's very difficult because I have all these signs and papers. So,
well, I'll let you go then. I hope you have another demonstration planned. And if you do, please let me know.
I might, but, you know, this one took a lot out of me. So I don't know if I could do another one soon. And anyway, nice talking to you, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So that was Alan Fisher, who wrote about this in the following way. This was the email I got from him. As you know, the war in Ukraine is a crime against humanity. The whole world is at stake as the war affects the climate crisis, the threat of nuclear war annihilation, and the spread of hunger, starvation, and disease. Code Pink, Peace Action, and other organizations have called for a week of global protests opposing war and militarism for September 12th through 16th. Here are the demands. Ceasefire now. Diplomacy to end the war in Ukraine. Money for climate, health care, and housing. Not weapons to enrich war profiteers. Do not risk nuclear war. For more info, check out peaceinukraine.org. And I don't know if a reporter from the Sentinel attended, as Alan suggested might be the case. And this is Alan Fisher, who threw this protest and apparently inspired by Code Pink, Peace Action, and other groups declaring that week of global protests. So now to the Benchlands, which is really the key focus of a lot of my recent netcasts here. It's where the city is trying to drive out homeless folks using the pretense of adequate shelter in order to get them to abandon their community in the Benchlands without providing them any alternatives that in any way measure up to the admittedly in many ways materially wretched conditions of the Benchlands, but the reality of a community there and of certain basic rights of privacy, self-determination, mutual support, and independence that they would not have if they essentially agreed to be a part of essentially an encampment behind a chain link fence or inside a closed armory with a curfew, with a no visitors requirement, where they could not come and go as they wished in terms of being able to go up there and come back and have very limited space for their possessions. It's a way that the city has of essentially okaying the elimination of all other visible homeless people in the city by telling them either get out, hide out, or apply to one of these programs, which cannot possibly even take all the people who are in the Benchlands, much less all the people who are in Santa Cruz who are outdoors and homeless. And this has been clearly evident for years, or at least for a year. I say it's probably been evident for years for sure, but it's been particularly evident after for the last year or so, where the Benchlands has been declared a certified campground, a sanctioned campground that was used as the pretext to destroy all other encampments in Santa Cruz and drive people into them before, of course, they're now being driven out and being offered spaces in the armory and in the Outlook encampment. Overlook, sorry, I always make that mistake. But it's, first of all, very few people are accepting this, and that's being used as the pretext to simply declare, we're going to take your property and destroy your encampment unless you just take what you have and get out of here right now. Although they're giving people about a week on each of these phases to leave. But remember, these are encampments that have been there for some people for 2 years. Imagine if you had been told to leave in a week from where you were living for 2 years. Might not be so easy for you. Even if you were more limited in a way, well, in terms of possessions you'd be having if you were living in a tent, but also you have a lot more opportunity if you lived in a house, in theory at least, you'd have... Well, I don't know, but in this, it's a pretty atomized society these days, but you might have closer connections with people who actually have more resources because they too, many of them live in houses, would be my speculation. Anyway, I've got numerous contradictory and really sort of absent information or reports absent information from the city mangler, or the city manager, as he calls himself, Matt Heffaker, and also Mayor Bruner, who I addressed a caustic speech to at the Tuesday City Council meeting, and I guess I'll probably be reading this speech at some point, maybe on Sunday, if I can muster up the energy to do it, a show then. I'm feeling, as I said, somewhat scattered and not in the best condition. Also, what I want to do is I want to contrast all the sort of different versions of information they have about supposedly the vacancies they have and how many people are in these various shelters at the Armory and the Overlook and 1220 River Street, and what other independent sources say as they destroy people's encampments, people's tents, steal people's property in the benchlands, and essentially give them really no real alternatives, but don't even meet the conditions of the Martin versus Boise decision that says don't take away people's, don't try to criminalize people outside with laws and policies that do this, unless you have some other option for them. And the city has only sort of set aside 10 beds as options to sort of say, see, we got 10 beds for you. And they're sort of slicing away at the bench lands, 20 or 30 at a time. And they're claiming that if people don't immediately accept these lodgings up in the bench lands, which may be for as short a period as a week, a month, several months, it's not clear at all. Very limited storage, and I've already discussed, you know, the other limitations of this. Anyway, the people are resisting this, the people who are victimized by this approach, folks who are outside, and they're holding resistance meetings in the benchlands with the Union of the Homeless Officials and Huff people and Food Not Bombs activists, and an attorney, Anthony Prince, showing up after a long absence. And that's happening again tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Thursday the 15th. On Friday the 16th at 5:30, there is another meeting of this resistance Union of the Homeless meeting and the Benchlands folks in the Phase 2 area. Phase 2 is the second demolition group. It's going to be divided. I hear different accounts. One from a city official is that there are 9 phases they're trying to use, but it could be as few as 6. They're slicing it off piece by piece, perhaps to avoid resistance from the rest of the encampment, with the sort of creating the illusion that if only they just keep quiet, things will go better for them, and besides, they're not under immediate attack, and there's nothing you can do, and all kinds of the usual rhetoric and claims that make people feel powerless who are outside. So this is happening tomorrow at 5:30. Take the Ocean Street, I should say the Water Street, sorry, the Water Street entrance, and walk toward the Dragon's Gate Bridge, the footbridge across from River Street to the park. And you'll find, as you pass the second stairway down to the benchland, which is really right after the county building and the courthouse, you'll see, go down that stairway, and you'll see where folks are meeting at 5:30, and join their meeting, and see what you can do to help, see what you can do to offer your own ideas and thoughts, and be possibly a part of folks who will witness what's going on. We had a Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting today, which we do every Thursday at 10:45 in the morning. We were a little late this morning, around 11:05, I think. And we heard some testimony from accounts of people that a Benchland resident was telling us that there were police there in the morning yesterday, on Wednesday, and I believe he may have said they were also there again on Thursday today, essentially bullying people, telling them that unless some people essentially have taken their stuff from phase, they were tended in phase one, which was completely demolished and is being bulldozed. The deadline for that was last Monday. The deadline for phase two now is for everyone to be out is next Monday. And the police officials or police men and women were charging that folks who had stuff, that people who had some of the people in the encampments in phase two were simply, it was trash. They were going to remove it, that they had, they were really from phase one, and therefore they didn't count anymore, that this was blocking the fire lanes, that this was to be either immediately removed by the owners or treated as abandoned property and or garbage and trashable. And one man was injured, that was Blue, who I interviewed, and you're going to hear his account. In fact, maybe I should begin with his account. I think I will do that. He's a little hard to hear. It was done in a restaurant, and there's musical background that may obscure it a bit, but let's listen in. So I'm talking with Blue, just got an interesting tent treatment. But
yeah, can I just get the
controller
or something?
Yeah, what kind? We have Coke, Sprite, root beer.
Okay.
So, Blue, it's September 14th. I'm here, and we're here in the Santa Cruz Diner, of all places. And you are, you look like you're kind of recuperating from a fun episode with the police earlier today. What happened?
An officer of the law, I don't know if he was from this area or not, but I don't think he was. But he grabbed my back of my tent and pulled down. He didn't say he was a sheriff officer right away. So he pulled the tent down and says, "Is anyone home?" And I yelled out and says, "Yeah, I'm living in my own tent. I've been here for over a year." And they said, you belong on the other, you came from the other side of that fence, right?" I said, "No, I've been here." And when the fence came down.
And the significance of this is the fence that Blue is referring to is a fence that was put up that separated phase two area from phase one. Phase one was the area nearest to Water Street, the area that was destroyed, evacuated, deported, cleared of human habitation last Monday, and some people just fled into the phase two area. Blue says he was not. In fact, I believe that's accurate because I visited his tent some weeks or months ago, and if it's the same place, it was not in the phase one area. I could have moved, and my memory couldn't be faulty, but this is his account.
Down broke four of my poles. The thing came down on my top of my face and bust my face open.
Wow. And what time of day was this?
It was 7:46 in the morning when I had to go to work.
So the point here is that the so-called kind, compassionate, reasonable approach by the city manager, as he describes it in his accounts to the city council, if you watch them on TV or in the computer or get to the city council sessions, is they're giving people a week's notice, several weeks' notice that they've really gone around, offered everyone decent and usable shelter, and now they expect people to vacate the area because it's very important to seed the bench lands with grass again, you see. That's more important than the lives of 200 to 300 people. It's that it'd be a usable park area, that there's no longer any emergency, and of course there is, but that's not the issue for the folks who don't regard the fate of poor people as any kind of an emergency. In any case, this fence, which Blue is talking about, is the fence that separates phase one from phase two. Phase two, of course, will be going down next Monday. But supposedly, if you're in the phase two area, at least you're safe until Monday. Well, not according to Blue, not him. He wasn't safe. And your job, of course, is
downtown street team.
Yes. And what did you see? How many police officers were around at this time? Did you notice?
I only saw him. And it was very strange because I had never seen him before. But I saw him come out of one of the sheriff's officer trucks.
And well, so you didn't even have time to pick up your stuff. You had to go immediately to work.
Right. I just had to go to work and tell my boss I couldn't come to work because the sheriff's officer just told me to move. They told me I was on the wrong side of the fence. I was like, no, I've been on this side of the fence for over a year and a half.
And we're talking about the fence that divides phase one from phase two.
Yes, sir. Phase one and phase two. I'm on phase two.
And were you warned at any time or offered accommodations yourself?
No, but that officer should have never touched my tent. He had no right to touch my fence or touch anything of my belongings.
Clearly. When did you return to your tent spot later today?
It was about 8:46, maybe 8:47, after I talked to my boss and told him I couldn't come to work, and I had to ride all the way back from Midtown.
When you got back, was your property still there?
All my property was still there, but my tent was still destroyed.
So tonight you'll be sleeping without a tent? Is that the story?
Yes, sir. No tent for my happiness.
That doesn't sound very happy. Did you see or did you get any accounts of this happening to anybody else?
A few of my friends got some of their stuff taken. Bikes got thrown on the other side of the fence. A couple of the officers physically says it's blocking the fire lane, and it wasn't blocking the fire lane. The only person who was blocking the fire lane was Whiskers. It's one of the other people who lives at the camp.
I got you. What's the reaction of people in Phase 2 to this latest police activity that seems to be...
World War IV going to happen soon. Yeah. If they keep on harassing all of us.
I hope so.
And I don't want any of us getting hurt by the cops.
Dig it. Was Jeremy Leonard anywhere around?
No, it was too early in the morning.
What kind of a question is that? Nobody wants to hear about Jeremy Leonard.
Jeremy is the city's man. I want to keep that in mind.
He's a sycophant, manipulator, deviant.
A vicious attack on poor Jeremy. Now,
Jeremy's an asshole. Sorry.
So this is concisely
a very poor opinion of Jeremy.
Right. Jeremy lied to all of us to help us. He said he's going to help us get a place to live or somewhere, not a shelter, but a real home to live in. He lied just like the
Housing Matters.
Yeah, Housing Matters physically said they can't find my records, they can't find my paperwork to get
housing vouchers?
Yeah, my voucher, and they said they can't find it, they can't get me into a house now. They lied to me the third time. I can't handle it. I hate liars.
Me too.
And we have been talking with
Lawrence McGregor.
Thank you.
Yeah. 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 Ye
And that was part of Creedence Clearwater Revival's Fortunate Son. And in case you missed some of the lyrics, some folks are born, made to wave the flag. Ooh, they're red, white, and blue. And when the band plays Hail to the Chief, ooh, they point the cannon at you, Lord. It ain't me, it ain't me, I ain't no senator's son. It ain't me, I ain't no fortunate one, no. Some folks are born, silver spoon in hand, Lord, don't they help themselves, no. But when the tax man come to the door, Lord, looking for like a rummage sale, yeah. It ain't me, I ain't no millionaire's son, no, no, it ain't me, I ain't no fortunate one, no. Yeah, some folks inherit star-spangled eyes. Ooh, they send you down to war, Lord. When you ask them, how much should we give? Ooh, they only answer, more, 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 more. It ain't me. I ain't no military son, Lord. It ain't me, I ain't no fortunate one. It ain't me, I ain't no fortunate one. No, 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 it ain't me, I ain't no fortunate son. No, no, it ain't me. Now, I also ran into Robert, I guess it was yesterday, who had this account of what happened to Blue and also some comments about his own situation. He lives in the Benchlands, and he had this to say. Well, I'm here with Robert, who's a visitor to the Benchlands and even a resident on occasion for a while, and it's about 27 on September 14th. Robert, what happened earlier here today?
Well, I heard Blue yelling about something and hollering at the cops. So, I mean, I heard it going on, but I didn't really pay attention. I was helping my friend move out of his tent, so I went to the armory.
Right.
Which now he hates it, and he works volunteering cleaning up around here. The other thing is they've really been putting a lot of police effort in here. Patrol at night, turn the lights, power off, and turn it back on. And then they're really going through, going and hassling people. And I heard the city people talking with the cops in front of my tent. I had to hide in there for about an hour so they wouldn't know I was there listening. My phone was dead again. Yeah. I'm hearing them talk about how what's going on here and laughing, even the city people.
When was this?
Yesterday and today.
Now, I understand today from a call from Troy that there were 8 to 10 cops going around threatening to take people's property as trash. Was this happening?
Yes. And the other thing is they're deciding what's hazardous and vile, saturated. That's what they say about the stuff down here. So basically they don't want nobody to, you know, they say it's all contaminated. And it's not good. And like I say, they haven't offered me anything since I talked to, what is his name, Jeremy, and there are other people, but, I mean, the Army's not going to work for me. For one thing, me and Salvation Army's not going to see eye to eye on some things. And having my disability, I'm a liability to them, because anything happens, they got to work with, you know, my injuries from workers' comp stuff, and they're not going to want.
I see you're limping. Is that part of the disability?
Yeah, my leg has to be replaced.
Huh.
I've had 8 surgeries on it since I've had my leg at Granite Rock. I have my herniated disc with a tear hasn't been addressed, or my neck in 7 years because put off, but I'm disabled by the state of California since 2009. That's why I'm not working.
What did you see, Robert, today that you think is worth mentioning?
Of all the police looking down on everybody, kind of their intimidating tactics, what they're doing to people, forcing everybody there to put all the stuff on the people who are here, squeezing them in, so now they're starting to fight more. And then everybody's all bottled here, and then they're going to move to the next step. They were down at the other end. They arrested a girl. 3 of them attacked a girl down there to get a warrant.
3 of the police attacked her?
Yeah, Kazoo witnessed it down right there in front of his tent. But you're going at both ends, and then the city people, they're tagging people left and right.
Now, what did you see, and when did you see these cops show up?
Oh, early this morning. They were here at 4-7, I think. They were up, you know, cruising through there, going through your cars, and then making noise, you know, turn the lights on, turn them off on the people at 2 o'clock in the morning, turn the power off.
Now, around after 7, how many police would you say showed up?
Oh, there's about 10, 12, 15 of them right up here, sitting around.
These were all Santa Cruz police?
Santa Cruz and some sheriffs. And then the other day, with the New Jersey license plates on the officers with the people when they first started. I took pictures. I have pictures of the vehicles from New Jersey. I don't know why they're here.
Now, today, did it look to you like they were simply clearing the fire lane here, or were they doing more than that?
They were doing other tactical moves. Mind altering, you know, just put squeeze on people and make them stressed out. You know, present right here, my friend, the guy I helped, he's moved out here to the armory. He's telling me up there they have 8 showers, but they're only using 1. They have 4 officers, 2 security guards. You got to sign in, sign out, anything you do, you got to get on a list, and to wait to take a shower. No one's really there to take a shower, but you still got to wait. And he don't like it now. But, you know, they put him in a tent, and now it's ripped because it's been sitting out in the sun for two months until they get him another one. And he's not liking it.
So how long has he been in the armory?
2 days.
Oh, so you think he's coming back to the bench line?
No, he's going to stay up there for a while. But I was telling him it's not going to work. And they haven't really tried to offer him anything, like I say, with in the past, me being 86 and them not talking to me for no reason. And I'm one of those ones that they're not going to want to. I'm high risk because...
You mentioned, yeah.
Grant Rock and me aren't done, and there's some people I said, I can't go there. And the person says, yeah, right, you were laughing. I said, well, better have a lawyer who can fight a billionaire because he ain't done paying. Anything happens to my Nina can back or me, gets reported, and they have to deal with them.
And we have been talking with...
Robert Woodleaf, too.
Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome.
All right. Yeah. And here's another account from Troy. Unfortunately, the sound quality gets difficult to impossible eventually, but we'll listen to a bit of it and see how far we can go. Okay, I'm on the line with Troy from the Benchlands. It's about 10 to 9 on September 14th. And Troy, you say the police are engaging in inappropriate behavior down there.
Well, yes, they're actually being very, antagonistic, uh-huh. And they're going. There's a fence line that they made, and they're telling people that they moved yesterday away from the other side of the fence line, which they're bulldozing right now. That any in the middle that they have to move it, or they're going to throw it away as well. They're calling everybody down here's our possession garbage. That all the things that help us to live or keep, that we've accumulated as homeless people, hopefully we can get a house and move into our house with our stuff. But they're just saying it's all garbage, and especially this one, the Hispanic officer, the one that took my vehicle a year or so ago. Yeah, he's being real, real antagonistic, hostile, tell him no. Now we're moving away. That's what he's saying. Pretty much, you know.
So I take it you don't have his name at the moment.
Oh, it's Martinez or something. Crap like that. I don't know. He's the same guy, but he's not better now.
So do I understand this right, that they're in the Phase 2 zone, which is the zone you're in, and they're coming
yes.
through and insisting you throw away stuff now before the Monday deadline?
Yeah, well, see, they're coming into the same stuff that people moved over here, but it's got to move it right now. If you and your little buddies can get this stuff, we're throwing it out. Yeah. So there's a frantic effort, again, by people who haven't had sleep in 2 days, to get your belongings moved again, just because this officer got a hit up his ass and went, take my authority in person. I'm not getting authority at all. As far as I'm concerned, they are antithesis to the Declaration of Independence, and they are the king of England and his fake judges and troopers or whatever the hell.
So, have you talked
and they're doing everything. They're doing everything to us that the king of England did to the settlers in America when we first came here.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to anyone else about this yet? I mean, have you called anybody else?
Yeah, there's the only number I have.
I got you.
And I don't have a working phone because it's very well.
Well, I will give Keith a call and tell him that, you know, he's planning a meeting down at your place at 5:30, but that's a ways off.
That was, some people get arrested because these cops are being very, very, very antagonistic, very disrespectful, and biased and prejudiced towards us. They treat us less than scum. They treat us like we're criminals and we're slaves and we're scum of the earth. But I tell you what, I fight in Vietnam, including my uncle.
How many cops would you
say? This is my country.
Troy, how many cops would you say are there? Say again.
Plus, they're calling in backup, so some sheriff guys are arriving now.
Okay, how many?
As soon as they make us start yelling at them, then they're calling for backup so they can shoot us.
And how many SCPD would you say are there?
10. Now there's two going up, like I said, sheriffs.
Okay.
And 12. I can't see who all got out of the car.
So have the police themselves, or the sheriffs picked up any property? Or are they just running around threatening people?
Just threatening people that they got.
Just threatening? Yeah, I got to tell you, I got a horrible connection here. Yeah, hard to hear you.
The place that I'm in, people moved the stuff here because they didn't have nobody. The police aren't transporting anybody's belongings according to my university. They're telling you have to remove it. If you don't, they're going to throw it away. We don't have the money to. Some people have a lot of belongings to it.
Right.
You know, some people have more equity than others.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let me give a call to Keith and see if he's got some ideas. He can put the information on the signal, and maybe some people can come down at least to video and witness. I don't know. I mean, that might happen.
Well, we have some people down here taking pictures and videos.
That's good. I'm catching only a part of what you're saying. I'm only catching a part of what you're saying. That's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to hear you.
Soon they're all going to get fired. The house worker needs to be fired. Our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And they're causing us harm and loss.
Gotcha.
Every moment they're here.
All right, well, I'm going to call Keith, and I will see what he says, and who knows what's going to happen, probably
nothing. Some people here don't do drugs. Some people here are just trying to survive because they lost their job or their medical bills got too much and they lost everything. Some people are here are just trying to beat lies and eat and back. So barely.
No, I hear you. I know that. You know that. We all know that. I mean, it's true. And they don't give a shit.
They're treating us all as like we're dirty drug addicts and scavengers and thieves. And that's wrong. They don't have no respect. They're just totally out of order. They're out of order. You need to call the National Guard and tell them.
I will. The National Guard would probably join them is the problem. Let me get to talk to Keith. And call me back in a few minutes if you want, and let me know what's happening. Oh, it sounds like it's really hard to hear you, and I'm catching about 15% of what you're saying. It's horrible. So,
That's why they got us with their Wi-Fi now. It's public Wi-Fi. They do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
Robert.
I hear you. And will you be at the meeting tonight? Hello? Okay.
And as I mentioned before, the meeting that happened that I'm speaking of happened yesterday night about 5:30. And there's going to be another tomorrow night at 5:30 because of the immediacy of what's going on, the complaints of police disrespecting, if not destroying, the property of people in violation of promises, in violation of posted deadlines, and so forth. And some of the residents were asking for folks to come down in the morning and with cameras and take pictures so that there can be documentation of what the police are doing when and if this is taken to court to seek an injunction, which is what Anthony Prince was talking about doing, and the Union of the Homeless Activists, Keith McHenry and Alicia Kuhl and others, were talking about doing at this meeting yesterday at 5:30 in the Benchlands, and presumably they'll be following up on tomorrow, although it's not clear who is going to be at the meeting. I think Keith is going to have trouble making it, but I did run into him today, Thursday, the 15th, giving out flyers at the Food Not Bombs meal, and I gave some out as well. And I did also catch a few interviews, which I'm going to play. But first, here's a short piece from the previous day, the day, the 13th, that would be Tuesday, when the day after the Monday deadline, when in fact the bulldozers apparently were coming in to finish up what had been declared a noon Monday deadline for everyone moving out of the Phase 1 area. And here's some of that.
About seven police officers walking down the first stairway to the Benchlands encampment, and it is around 5 to 10.
Go ahead.
Sure. Yes. And we are, some of us are following them from the people concerned with supporting those who are being told to move out. And we have, as I said, looks like actually six police officers. And an occasional California homeless in a t-shirt. Larry?
I can't hear you.
No problem. And the police have gone all the way to the large dumpster, which is at the beginning, nearest the Ocean Street area. And
that's the Water Street area. I occasionally get those streets mixed up.
Several of them are entering the encampment. And two police officers are being videoed by Laura, giving a heads up to the campers. What did the cops tell the camper?
He said that if they're not out by, he's just giving them a heads up. It's 10 o'clock now. If they're not out by noon, they're going to be arrested for trespassing.
Thank you, babe.
How long do we have, actually? Since you guys are here, a rebel estimate.
What time? Do you recall what the time was?
Noon.
Yep.
Okay. I don't know what time it is.
Okay. 10 o'clock.
Okay, come on.
But it's not clear that police are offering people places to go, however. So we'll see what people are going to decide to do.
It's 10 a.m. now and we have till noon.
Is what, yeah, it's what they say. And they're threatening to arrest people, of course, for trespass at noon. But, again, I don't hear of any offers of shelter, alternate shelter here. So that, and one officer claims that has already happened before, but I guess let's ask the folks if they've been offered shelter, they would know. Thank you. An officer suggested a yellow form has information, which means a phone number people can call. It does not mean shelter. That's different. Jeremy has been down. The office is often closed, as you know. Nor is there any necessary action from the office.
Well, the area's going to be closed.
And meanwhile, on the edge of the trail up leading to the courthouse, there are, or were, people singing, "Oh, Give Me a Home," where the buffalo roam.
Definitely not my call. It's way above me. So, and they've had 7 days. So,
you know, most of the folks are procrastinating.
Yep, totally agree.
Most of the people in the world are procrastinating.
I totally agree.
Some kind of added energy boost.
I guess I better go ask.
Down the last minute to do something.
Yep, all of a sudden, right?
So this is the camp that's closest to the Ocean Street, or Water Street, I should say. Anybody offer you a place to go here or not?
No.
How about you?
Probably not.
Jeremy kept pushing the Outlook, whatever the armory is.
Yeah, that's where that is.
And that's too far away from resources and my support system. Also, it isolates me from the people I do depend on, or that depend on me also, and the fact that I can't cook for myself, and I can't have electricity, all the lacks that they have actually cost me and my quality of life, whereas there's just better places to be. And quite frankly, I keep telling him that I'm holding out to enter the River Street camp, because not only do they have showers and toilets, they have a kitchen area, you're allowed visitors, and you are allowed to come and go on your own accord.
1220 River.
Yes, 1220 River Street. It's a wonderful location. And my suggestion to a possible solution, smaller camps, scattered around town, so that way the people can choose more, not maybe not entirely, but have more choice and control over who they live around and who represents them within their community, smaller community, that is. And say, like, one at De La Viega, one at Harvey West. The Agreement Camp by Brent, amazing. Harvey West was a perfect example of how homeless camps can work out. It was clean. There was no open air anything that was illegal. Like, people got along. They took care of each other. And most of all, it was nice. It was actually a nice place to be.
And we've been talking with
Teal.
And Teal, you probably know numerous people here. Who would you say has been offered a place and has taken it successfully in the last week?
I would have to think about that, but right off the top of my head, and I would say my brother's neighbors behind his camp there, he's the last one on the right here at the Water Street Inn. Mm-hmm. They were successfully signed up to the armory, but like I said, I wanted River Street just because there's more choices, and it seems like there's better case management there also.
And she's a little hard to hear, but that's 1220 River Street that Teal is holding out for it. However, as far as I understand it, that's been full for quite a while, and they aren't really cycling people through there very rapidly. Few are going, you know, into other accommodations, and a few new ones are coming in, but not much. Also, I heard from a city official who does not wish to be disclosed that that they had offered people, I don't know, places at the Overlook, which is the encampment up by the armory, and then there's an encampment inside the armory, although that's a little unclear too, and I hope to have more information on that perhaps on Sunday if I get it together to do that. So that's what's happening with Teal, and that's what was happening. Well, let's hear a little bit more and find out what's happening.
I will definitely talk with you more when I'm not in danger of the...
Gotcha. You're in the middle of moving. Thank you to you. So we also have two police officers have gone into the bushes between the camp and the river, apparently looking for looking for folks who are down there, or instructing them, seeing them down there and telling them to return, perhaps? Anybody offer you a place?
No.
No? Nobody spoke to you?
No. I heard they're taking people in their van or something like that, but...
Nobody came down and talked to you?
Nope.
Thank you.
What I was trying to do was verify if people had actually been offered a place. Now, what I heard from the city official that I talked to, or the person who volunteered with the city officials, was that some 20-odd people had been offered places, but only two of them had accepted it, and only two on that day, the 13th, that Monday deadline for the Phase 1 clearing, had actually been transported up to the armory. And when I gave a speech denouncing the removal of these people at city council later that night, which was also on the 13th, it was Tuesday the 13th, the city council meeting, I mentioned that. And the mayor's response, I kept demanding, what are the numbers of people? Because the city manager's report did not give any numbers at all as to who was offered, who accepted, how many people were essentially had their tents destroyed or were forcibly forced to relocate, but to nowhere. I mean, some of them went into the Phase 2, but that was just further crowding and further pretext, apparently, for harassment by police, at least according to some of the accounts we've been hearing. And the response of Mayor Bruner was, she didn't bother to ask city manager or city mangler, as I called him, Matt Huffaker, where are your numbers? You know, what exactly are your numbers? You didn't give any numbers in your city mangler's report that you did earlier. She didn't ask. She just said, oh, you can go to the website, she said to the public. And she referenced me, though not by name, and what I said, I think what I may do is read this speech that I wrote, or maybe I can play the audio if I can get the audio to work. But let's finish this first, this encounters at the 2 hours before the deadline on September 13th for Phase 1. Let me move so you can move your stuff. Their stuff from Phase 1 fenced area to Phase 2 fenced area. Did you get offered a place? Did anybody offer you anything? That's what I thought. No one did. So, Kevin, you're preparing a discarded tent for the garbage heap. How many folks have you helped to move today?
Today? Just two.
And you've been out here for the last 2 hours, 3 hours?
I don't know.
It's now about 10:10. That's more than 3 hours.
But this site is now completely clean.
Or at least it's back to its dusty self.
Yeah, restored to its original condition.
This actually used to be the site of Kevin of the Goats.
Yeah, I'm still in touch with him. He's settled nicely in Rhode Island.
Really? What's happening with Kevin? And some of you who have been listening to these netcasts from a year ago may remember Kevin was a guy who lived near the first stairway down if you're coming from Water Street, which is actually near the tables in the back of the interior between the courthouse and the county building, where we used to hold meetings of Huff and also meetings with the Union of the Homeless. And Kevin had about four or five goats and chickens, and he was trying to interest the, authorities that be who provide grants and provide in goats doing a kind of combination grass eating, grass control,
And also they were very, very tame and much beloved by people who saw them. Eventually they were seized, and Kevin was, well, you'll hear, Kevin of the Goats is described by this other Kevin, who's the union of the homeless guy, who is helping people to move their stuff. And he's the fellow I'm talking to. Here he gives us a bit of a description of what happened to Goatmaster Kevin.
Settled just a few miles from that big old monstrous lake. What's it called? Big long lake runs all the way through Vermont and up into Canada.
I believe
it's,
you.
It's shallow enough that it's warm enough to swim in the summer and play ice hockey on in the winter, and that's kind of like where I want to live, I think. So
well, maybe he'll invite you.
He has invited me. I'm staying in touch.
Really? Yeah, send me his email. I'd like to get in touch with him too.
Okay, I can do that.
Oh, did he get his goats across the country?
No, the SPCA took them away. I didn't get the whole story on that. Somebody reported him, I think, and they came and snatched his goats while he was gone. He was originally going to walk with his goats and his dogs all the way across country and make it a, you know, raise money for something kind of a thing. But they took his goats away, and he got sad, and he just wanted to get there in a hurry, so he jumped on his bus with his dogs.
Dig it. Or should I say, bleh!
He's a good guy. I miss him.
I do, too.
He was Rhode Island.
Occasionally.
I lost my Boston accent a long time ago.
You saw some Boston bounce to you, though.
I see the girls all by dressed in their summer clothes.
And that was the Rolling Stones' Painted Black from their fourth album, Aftermath. And here's some of the lyrics, or actually, I guess it's all the lyrics. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore. I want them to turn black. I see the girls walk by dressed in their summer clothes. I have to turn my head until my darkness goes. I see a line of cars and they're all painted black, with flowers and my love both never to come back. I see people turn their heads quickly and look away. Like a newborn baby, it just happens every day. I look inside myself and see my heart is black. I see my red door. I must have painted it black. I must have it painted black. Maybe then I'll fade away and not have to face the facts. It's not easy facing up when your whole world is black. No more will my green sea go and turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you. If I look hard enough into the setting sun, my love will laugh with me before the morning comes. I see a red door and I want it painted black. No colors anymore. I want them to turn back. I see the girls walk by dressed in their summer clothes. I have to turn my head until my darkness goes. I want to see your face painted black. Black as night, black as coal. I want to see the sun blotted out from the sky. I want to see it painted, 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 painted black. Yeah. And here's another interview with Robert Woodleaf, who... he's a fellow who saved a couple people from a car. Was it one or two? I'm not sure. At least one. An accident that happened 3 or 4 years ago around when the Ross camp was still in flower or still going on. And I ran into him a few days before the other interview you've heard with around the issue of Troy and the destruction of his pulling the tent down on top of Troy's head. I'm sorry, on top of Blue's head. It was Blue that it happened to. Anyway, here's Robert Woodleaf again. This was on September 8th.
Okay, well, it is about 1:30 on the 8th of August. No, it's September, for heavens. And I'm here at the, what do we call it, Dragon's Gate Bridge. Pedestrian bridge links the campground to the San Lorenzo Park Plaza. And I'm talking with
Robert Woodleaf.
And Robert, you're weathering the heat?
Yes. Got a little hot out here. It's nasty and dirty.
And are you currently in the benchlands?
Yes.
Are you in the phase about to be demolished?
Yes and no.
I see. You're visiting, okay?
Well, I have a tent at one end and I'm at the other end. I'm all over the place here.
So you have a summer home here and
yes.
A winter home.
Yep. Beachfront and... courthouse front.
Now the courthouse front, how many people do you estimate are being impacted by this particular phase?
Right now, quite a few. About 20, 30 of them up there are really upset. And they had a fire this morning there. How convenient.
And so it was not a campfire with weenies or anything. It was an accidental fire.
Yeah, accidental tent fire. Yes.
Did anybody get hurt? Or?
No. People were hauling help. So, you know, people around here, when there's a fire, they all jump to it. But the fire department came, got pretty much out.
So in other words, the people were their own fire department.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And they've been turning the lights, power off, and they have live audio and camera at night telling people to get off the lawn out there. People always mess with the guy on the intercom, calling on cops.
Has Jeremy been making his way through the...
Today's the first day, but I've been seeing the people come through taking pictures and kind of like strategic... you know, observation on lots of people moving.
So you say lots of people are moving, or?
Well, it seems like people are moving and leaving their tents and make it somehow a mess, like scattered all over, not picked up, and it's kind of odd. You know, they disappear, like, you know, they have people to make a mess and leave, if you know what I mean, to make it look bad for the others.
What do you make of this?
I think it's a joke. I've been thinking about this. If you all call... It was managed by Jeremy as, you know, like a military camp thing. How did they drop the ball and make it look like a third world country if it was being managed? So I guess they should take and give the money back that they took for all the stuff they did.
I wouldn't hold my breath.
Right, but wouldn't you think that if you're paying, you're taking money to manage something, how do you say you're managing it got out of hand? So that's a catch-22, I guess, you're going to have to answer, or fry me again, you know.
So So, how much? When was the last time you were at the Water Street entrance?
Today.
What time of day?
Early this morning. I get up, you know, around. People come to the gate. They're putting the gate chains back up. See the fences in the water.
Is there any blockage? Can people come through?
People are doing it when they're gone. You know, when they're, you know, when the cops leave at a certain time. But they come in the middle of the night, turn the lights on, the cars halt, you know, fly through there, and just they're doing a mind warfare, if you know what I mean, to some of these people.
So, how many people would you say have left that section of the campground?
Well, not maybe three or four on their own. The other ones are being forced, and they're not happy with it, losing their stuff. So, the other thing is who are they? They're helping people, but no one's asking me about
help, Robert. Help.
Well, the thing is I heard the ladies today saying they're offering housing voucher. They're getting them on the housing voucher list, I guess. That's not the same thing as a voucher. A list, anybody can get that. Place them on a list. So they're misinterpreting people, if you know what I mean. I think they're fraud them on giving them housing.
I see this little canopy set up here at the Dragon.
A cell phone, you know, for people to get a phone.
Right, it has nothing to do with the Benchlands camp.
No. She's helping people get a phone.
And your phone is operational these days?
No, I lost it, and then I got a new one, and then lost it down here for a few minutes talking to church people, so I wasn't too happy.
It
so
just slips out of your hands,
it
Robert.
Was in my backpack. I got a new backpack, a good one with a water 3-liter thing in here.
But it doesn't have a lock on it, I see.
Well, it's better than the other one, so it cost me. And the phone's still on. I tried to have it turned off, and it's so hard, my cricket service. So I'm going to go get a new one in San Jose. This is going to be a backup, I hope. So anyway, I'm being penalized hard. I'm still wondering when did I get any notice about my car? Nothing. And I'm going to get a list because I have some people that got their other cars. Yeah. Yes. You know, I have a feeling I know where a lot of people's cars are being stored without any information. So I'll get back to that.
Right on.
I'm going to try to get one. But there's a lot going on here that I see. A few nights ago, power's out, if you remember.
Yeah.
Late in the evening, I was coming back from Safeway with a friend of mine. We come down Water Street. I told my friend, I see a drone right there. It's too low. Too quick. I have a pair of binoculars. As you look through the binoculars, you see a red laser, a wide beam. You can't see it with the naked eye. And I told him, look, right at Ocean Street here, hovering the trees. And then I saw two guys on a bike wearing black down at the other end, flying on those electric bikes. A drone flying right behind them, chasing them, and going underneath the bridge after them. That's a high-tech drone.
Is that a private action, or would you suggest a government action?
I'd say it was a government, because it's too high-tech. And it was, you know, flying pretty good up on the guys on those electric bikes. They were doing about 40, and the drone was on his tail. They were wearing all black, and it went underneath the bridge. I was surprised he went after them.
Tomorrow there's a meeting at 3 o'clock of the Benchlands Resistance, as I call it. What do you expect? Do you think people will be showing up? I know, you showed up last week?
Unfortunately, we had a mishap, because Zoo and I, we went to go get phones and some things across town on bikes, and we got off on the wrong spot, because you didn't listen to it. Yeah, true. And we got late, but he got caught by, Keith coming in, and I was stuck in San Jose. So
you'll be coming tomorrow?
Yes. I'm on my way to San Jose now. So I will.
But detain you no further unless there's anything you want to say.
Yeah. I've been wanting to come. I wish I'd had all my paper stuff to show all the real things that happened. But these guys know who I am. Even when I hide my face, they still know I'm there. It's pretty funny. They follow me.
And we will remember who you are because your name is?
Robert Woodleaf.
Thank you, Miss Senora Woodleaf.
Yeah. I should do that other interview, the last one with the guy, but until I get better, I'm putting it off.
We'll do it at some point, and I will.
You can be there.
Who knows?
You can.
You certainly can tell me about it, if not.
Yeah.
And I will. I'll talk to you again.
Yeah, I'm like you say, I'm not getting no nothing. Like, ever since I signed up for the House Navigator, I got hit with my Social Security. You know about. My injuries, you know, if I'm still entitled, like I say, I'm not done with my own stuff with Grand Rock, but these people keep, I have these guys going around now watching me, looking at my right leg, because I have $100,000 in snap leg, it's not working. They don't think I'm disabled.
So I think you're a fraud, is that it?
I wish I was working. But I'm stuck out here because of Sector PD, put me out here in the Benchlands.
Is there much police presence here during the day?
Too much.
So how many cops would you say are here now?
This last week, they came in here about, I went to 7-Eleven, come back. There's like 9 cop cars on the street, had one on the levee here, do some kind of tag road. Then there was 4 sheriffs in the afternoon. No one seen them coming. They were like football linebackers going through. So they kind of doing their little, you know, presence here and like catching people off guard. And they're going through probation and stuff.
And what's been going on today? Anything particular?
Well, other than they're taking those people's stuff away, and that's about it. People
whose stuff got taken away?
Guys that are in the first base. I mean, so they got a week, but why are they taken away right now? Oh, yeah, another thing, you've been turning the water off and the power off until 2, 3 in the morning. Yep.
Well, that's all to save you from blackouts, you see.
Oh, really?
It's all, well, for your own good, you know?
You're worried about things. You're cleaning the river before they lose that permit.
Wow.
Come on, I know that one. Look at how that's on them. So they got old people, all part of the Santa Cruz Take Back people. They're watching. They go through here. These guys don't see it, but I know who they are. They don't like me. They don't say nothing to me. They run.
Now, would you say that the people in Phase 1 are more likely to want to take some kind of defensive action?
Sure. It's going to get. I hear this is on. Someone told me that the National Guard's here on standby or something. I'm going to check out more through some people that told me this. You know, it's not a hearsay, but they're pretty well, you know, they know. So I'll know more detail, but I heard they're here waiting. They're going to be, the guys in the middle down here, they're not leaving. The Hispanic guys said they're not going to leave. But I have a feeling they'll have that tactical military vehicle here to push them out. It's going to get brutal on that day.
Perhaps a machine gun would be helpful.
For whom? Them or us?
Well, the local morticians.
Oh, God. Yes, you're right. Hopefully I'm far away. I'm not going to stick up on that one. You know.
Are you going to go by bus, by plane, by train? How are you going to get to San Jose today?
Poor man's limo.
You can do your thumb? No, bus.
No, bus. I never hitchhike. I'm too scared.
Really?
Yeah, I'm afraid to hitchhike. I don't want to get mugged.
Oh, I should hitchhike with you. We could be tough,
yeah,
man, together.
Know,
you know.
I grow my beard back and stuff, I could look like, you know, Santa Claus.
You think you'd look like Santa Claus?
You know, have you ever had anybody tell you, hey, an old man asked me the other day, do you ever get picked on for having blonde hair? I'm like, huh? What? Where'd that come from? Right? An old man told me that, about a 70-year-old man. I go, well.
I've never thought to ask you if you've ever been picked off for having blonde hair.
Mm-hmm. I never thought I heard an old man say that. I'm like, what's that got to do? And then the guy tells me, well, how can you be Indian? You got blonde hair. I go, what? I'm Native, Cherokee, Lumpy, Comanche, and German.
Well, you might also be part German.
Yep, I am.
Ein Reich, so that's the fair. I'm the Mutter.
From Germany. My mom's mom. Yes, full blood German.
Well, I'm not going to hold that against you, and I'm going to let you go, and I hope you find that lost cat.
Yeah, just remember, BMW, Bob Make a Wish. Those are my initials. Bob Make a Wish. See? Or bring my wallet. I like talking to you.
Robert, you sound happy anyway.
I am. I'm a little bit together, even though the last few days I've been wanting to throw in a towel because of my injuries. I'm like getting where I can't walk. But I already had to face off some guy at Cocock me the other night. But I think it worked out because as soon as he hit me, some big white boy, I hit him with my bamboo stick right across the forehead and one time. Then he's throwing rocks, going to call the cops on me, and there's 50 people there. I told him, come up to look here and
this was in the campground?
Yep, up there in Benchlands, in front of probably everybody in the camp.
What's the reason this happened?
There's some other guys fighting, so I stopped the big guy from beating the guy and put my up until he wouldn't go to jail. This guy told me he's going to punch me. Well, I turned my eyes, and all of a sudden he gave me a good old solid punch. The guy's about 6'5", little heavy guy. Hit me. When he hit me, I responded so quick, I cracked him across the head with a bamboo stick instead of a kick in the stomach. And then he's like, going to call the cops on me, and everybody's looking at him like, cop caller? But he, you know, he punched me when I wasn't looking, so I stand up, come up here. And,
self-defense.
Yeah, come up here and let a West Side guy show you something. Hit like a girl. And then after that, I had a guy come up to me and go, Rocky, what's up? Next day, some colored man, I'm all,
ba ba bump, ba ba bump, ba ba bump, ba ba bump.
And then some other guy said, hey, don't go get that guy mad, because he'll go off on you. He can, you know, so I guess I have a good, pretty well.
All right, well, we're going to leave this conversation because it could go on indefinitely.
Oh, I like to hear what you have to say sometimes.
Sometimes you may. Well, you've heard me. I go on and on,
well,
too.
Hey, that guy Richard's mean. No, he's all right.
So getting back to the situation that's likely to be happening, let's say Well, tomorrow at the meeting of the Benchlands Resistance at 5:30 for Phase 2, and let's say the Phase 2 deadline next Monday, the 19th, it's interesting to contrast the enthusiasm that people were expressing on the 9th. There was a meeting in the Benchlands in the afternoon, and there's really a lot of passionate interest in people organizing themselves. And when there was no attorney there, Keith was perhaps getting a bit winded. Keith McHenry was doing a lot of the kind of organizing, leading, and suggesting different avenues for people to possibly resist. And, you know, he had some ideas. He was presenting them. But this, people picked up the ideas of actually really beginning to create a network of resistance. They passed around a sign-up sheet, which didn't happen, unfortunately, yesterday when there was a meeting with the attorney there, Anthony Prince. And it's just, it's difficult to fathom how these things go in peaks and troughs. So, for instance, this enthusiasm that people felt last Friday for the to stand up and support people on the, I guess it would be the 12th. By the time the 12th rolled around, there were only five or six of us who showed up. And that was far less than the number of people who volunteered and who were enthusiastic. And there were actually even fewer than that number. I was one of them, but I was, frankly, pooped. What I did do is I did some interviews, which you heard. But it was Kevin in his Santa Cruz Homeless Union T-shirt who was running around helping people move their tents from Phase 1 into Phase 2 and trying to assist people to do what they needed to do, which was, of course, part of the whole purpose of the meeting that we'd had the previous Friday. And the meeting that we had yesterday really was concerned with trying to arrange for an injunction, perhaps recognizing that direct resistance didn't seem to be in the cards. I don't know. It may, you know, anything can happen. You can never really tell until you reach the day what actually is going to be going on. But the main organizers, few of us showed up, but not enough of the supporters and not enough of the key organizers who were mostly the students. I think one student showed up. One woman who was a student came and hung out for a couple hours. But we just, you know, there wasn't enough to really do a lot. There were some people who I hadn't expected to show up who did and were very dedicated and will probably be showing up next Phase 2 eviction date. And I like to think that what might happen is there might be a gathering momentum that grows. I heard a pep talk by Anthony Prince, the attorney, very similar to the one he gave several years ago at the Ross camp, where there was an injunction, which was only defeated by the lies of Susie O'Hara and city attorney Giglione, whose name I always mangle, who shortly thereafter actually resigned because he, in a kind of a scandal, he defamed one of the council members who was supportive of the encampment and who testified in court in favor of the encampment and its right to exist and its need to exist. That was Drew Glover, who then was subsequently recalled as part of this right-wing riptide that's been rolling through the city, with the occasional strong activist response at the Black Lives Matter movement, which crested, I guess, in the summer of 2020. But in any case, I've continued to state that I think the Union of the Homeless needs new leadership, not because the leaders are incompetent, but mainly because they're overworked. Keith McHenry is got a full-time job doing Food Not Bombs. He really is trying to feed lots of people with, you know, his budget is breaking according to his own account. And he's he needs more cooks, and he needs, it's, the city isn't helping. And the homeless situation is growing worse, not better, as the eviction crisis grows. At least that's his perspective. And the food was good. I was out there today. Very tasty walnut peanut soup, and spaghetti was tolerable, and the salad was very tasty. Strawberries and different fruits, yummy. But you can't do all these things at the same time and really organize. And that's really the key issue that Anthony Prince has been relying on. And I'm hopeful that he can do this, or that the communities that he's trying to organize can do it. But it hasn't been happening in Santa Cruz that I've seen. And I'm always reluctant to bring this up because I sound like a naysayer and a gloom spreader. I'm not trying to spread gloom. I'm really like to see things get better, and it doesn't mean it can't, but it needs to be, there needs to be organized, people have to be willing to spend time to do it, not just superannuated people like myself, or people who are trying to hold on two jobs and raise a family like Alicia. And I'm hoping that the declarations that were being encouraged at the last meeting yesterday of the Benchlands Resistance Union of the Homeless / Huff / Food Not Bombs are going to be successful. But there have been declarations and declarations gathered over the years. And there have been many encampments destroyed. And Martin versus Boise has been sitting there on the books waiting to be used, if it could be used at all. So it's an interesting question, and it has been, you know, the threat of the Martin versus Boise decision, which, as I remind you, says you can't criminalize people who are outdoors unless you have a place for them to go. And Anthony Prince has claimed that that has to be an indoor place. And certainly many of the lawsuits that Anthony has either advised or spearheaded in Sausalito and Santa Cruz, Sacramento, maybe Fresno, I'm not entirely clear who is the major party there, and other places, have been successful in the short run and even to some extent in the long run. Novato, I think, has been successful. And also another key element to Anthony's proposals and the idea of union organizing is to have people themselves learn how to file their own lawsuits, and also hold a community of people together that recognize it's not going to be one in the courts. It's only going to be one through a combination of street action and legal pressure. And that's, I think, a sound theory. The question is, can it be translated into action on the ground? And that's can be difficult. And I've spoken of difficulties that's happened internally, which have to do with how dissent is dealt with in the organization, how debate is dealt with. And that's an issue that I've talked about in the past. I'm not going to talk about it now. But it's always an issue, too, that has to be resolved. I'm a big fan of I'm a strictly democratic process, although I also recognize it's important to take some action and get things moving. But so let's take another musical break, and then we'll come back and I'll try to figure out where we're at.
I don't have to stay out of
And that was Some Kind of Wonderful by Grand Funk Railroad. Not exactly sure what kind of social significance it has, but we'll let that one go for the time being. So now we're going to have a flashback, believe it or not, to July 11th, 1994 in San Francisco. And you're going to hear the arrests of people who were massing to feed people in the Civic Center Plaza and essentially stand up to the likelihood of arrests, because that's what they were doing in 1994. And it's kind of, in a way, self-explanatory, though it is also chaotic. We're going to end the program quickly because we don't have much time. I'm again running up against a deadline. Thanks for listening. Again, this is July 11th, 1994. Funa Bomb, San Francisco arrests. And just one more reminder, you know, wander on down to the meeting tomorrow if you're listening to this on the 15th. The 16th at 5:30 is a meeting for the Benchlands Defense. You can learn about what's going on down there and also how you can support people who are in other encampments who are having problems. It depends a lot. I can't promise that that's going to be the workshop that I think would be very useful to have, and hopefully we will be having. But it is part of the continuum of resistance that's going on and that people are joining to try to stop the city from imposing its sort of iron fantasies about shelter, as they use these as sort of a fluffy fantasy about shelter being imposed with an iron hand to remove people from the benchlands.